On Thursday, the 15th of May, The Spectator is hosting a live book club event. Sam Leith will be joined by former Telegraph editor-in-chief and military historian Max Hastings. It will be an opportunity to talk about Max's new book, Sword, D-Day, Trial by Battle, as well as mark the 80th anniversary of VE Day. The full details are as follows. 7:30 on Thursday the 15th of May at the Shaw Theatre in Euston, London, and tickets start from £27.50, although I believe there are ticket options that include a signed copy of the book. For those tickets, go to www.spectator.co.uk/bookslive. We look forward to seeing you there. Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Oscar Edmondson and I'm joined today by Isabel Hardman and Danny Shaw, former advisor to Yvette Cooper. And Keir Starmer has succeeded in keeping immigration at the top of the news agenda for another day, although he may not be too happy with the headlines. After his set piece announcement yesterday, the Prime Minister's caught between fire from either side. In the left corner, he's accused of pandering to Nigel Farage and potentially even echoing the rhetoric of Enoch Powell, while Farage himself has called the Prime Minister insincere and playing catch-up. Now, Isabel, there was a real change in rhetoric from Labour on immigration yesterday, but I suppose the biggest question is, do you really buy it?
Yeah, that's the really interesting thing, isn't it? And you don't have to go back that far in time on Keir Starmer to find, as the Conservatives have, letters where he is endorsing a much more liberal line on whether it's illegal immigration or indeed legal immigration, which is what the subject of yesterday's white paper was. So that's, you know, there's a kind of sincerity thing here. And there's also, I think, and Danny will know far better than I about this, there's a difference between Keir Starmer and Yvette Cooper in terms of determination to tackle this. I think from the Home Secretary's point of view, this is a policy issue. For the Prime Minister, it's a political issue. And that's in some ways natural, given their jobs. But it is also an issue for Keir Starmer because he is doing this purely because there is an obvious, very visceral threat from reform. Labour is going out all guns blazing after the local elections to show that it takes seriously the concerns of its reform-minded voters. And on one level, that's absolutely right to show that you're taking those concerns seriously. But if you're only doing it because you want to send a message, voters aren't daft. That's one of the reasons they're going to reform and other parties, because they haven't believed the mainstream parties on this for a long time. So there's the sincerity question, whilst at the same time causing a huge amount of tension on the Labour backbenches.
Well, on that tension on the Labour backbenches, where are we at with the fallout from this one?
So we had the common statement from Yvette Cooper yesterday, and as you mentioned in your intro, Oscar, there were some Labour MPs or currently suspended Labour MPs who were very critical, and that's entirely to have been expected. I think that Yvette Cooper and Keir Starmer would have started yesterday thinking we are going to be accused by somebody, whether it's a suspended Labour MP like Zara Sultana or somebody who is still a sitting Labour MP like Nadia Whittam, of pandering to the far right. I don't know whether they'd expected to be accused of sounding like Enoch Powell, as Zara Sultana claimed in the Commons yesterday. The Prime Minister talked about an island of strangers if immigration rules weren't set fairly and abided by. And she suggested that that was very similar to some of the rhetoric in Enoch Powell's famous Rivers of Blood speech. But I think what will worry the Labour whips more is the silent soft left, is the people who didn't speak in the debate because they still want to be loyal to Keir Starmer. But they feel as though on multiple fronts that are very emotive issues for Labour, they are just being pushed too far. So if it weren't for the fact that the party is also proposing to cut disability benefits and has already cut international development spending, then maybe these guys would be thinking, oh, right, fine, you know, we've just got to knuckle down. This is hard. But I think they're weary at the moment. And that's the concern of Labour whips is, you know, if you've got a leaky tap of disappointment for MPs, which is always the case with every government, and eventually the bath fills up and floods, what's going to be the thing that causes the flood? Is it the immigration? Is it the welfare? Is it the international aid? And that's where I think the real work goes on in the party. It's not the people who sound off from the back benches, because you kind of knew they were going to do that anyway. And, you know, it's harder in government to have back benches criticising you than it is in opposition when you're defining yourself against the Corbynite left of your party. But you kind of know there's going to be an awkward squad in any party of government. What you need to be more worried about is the people who at some point will say, I can't take this anymore, and who start to think that rebelling is safe. You know, they're already doing a lot of letter writing. Where does this go from here?
Danny, on Yvette Cooper, your old boss, she's been using similarly strong rhetoric to Keir Starmer, talking about the failed free market experiment with migration, for example. From your experience with Yvette Cooper, do you think she is the one that can take on Nigel Farage?
I don't think Yvette would see herself as taking on Nigel Farage. I don't think that's how she sees it. But the policies that she's announced have been in development for months, if not years, actually. I mean, when I was working with her and her team before the election, the months before the election, they'd already developed a policy that was linking, for example, the need to reduce the reliance on overseas workers with the need to improve training and skills for domestic workers. And that was really the centerpiece of the announcement yesterday. And that was something, you know, that's been developed. The details have been gone through really carefully. And I do know with Yvette, she will go through the detail line by line by line. This is not about her thinking, oh, I've got to take on Farage. This is about her coming up with policies that are absolutely necessary because the levels of migration are unsustainable. And the way to tackle it is really predominantly to tackle the overseas worker routes. And then the wrapping around it, the rhetoric, some of the language used by Keir Starmer, well, that is more political. And that, I think, he will have been advised by his team around him. You need to make this sound tough. You need to park your tanks on Farage's lawn, because that's where we're going to be clobbered. And Yvette will understand that. She completely gets the politics of it. But for her, she would not sign up to anything unless she was absolutely in agreement with the policy and the evidence behind it.
But surely there must have been a calculation within Labour circles about how this rhetoric was going to be received. Do you think there's any concern that they're maybe even playing into Nigel Farage's hands here by making an already high salience issue even more high stakes?
Well, I think there will have been a calculation. They know that some of these policies and the way that they're presented are not going to be popular amongst some of the MPs that Isabella's talked about. And, you know, and there may be other voters who are uncomfortable with it as well. But I think they calculate that this is the right approach. It's a tough approach. And by the way, you know, it's not that unusual from the approach taken under the Blair and Brown years. John Reid was a very, very tough Home Secretary. He came in and changed the rules about the deportation of foreign offenders because Charles Clarke, his predecessor, had basically been sacked because of the failure to deal with that particular issue. He was tough. David Blunkett was very tough on immigration. There were every year almost, I think, there was a new Asylum Act or an Immigration Act because the levels of the asylum applications were soaring in the late 1990s, early 2000s. So don't think this is some huge departure from New Labour in terms of the rhetoric and how tough they've been. And by the way, just adding to that, the hostile environment that people have attributed correctly to Theresa May when she was Home Secretary, that started under Labour. And it's documented that those policies and that phrase was used under Labour before 2010.
Isabel, just going back into the white paper from yesterday, I did want to make use of the fact that we've got you on the podcast today to ask you about social care and the end of the social care visa. What was your reaction to that?
I mean, look, on one level, it is not great that not just in social care, but in healthcare more widely, we rely so heavily on overseas workers when often their health services and social care services in their own countries really need them. That's not ethical. On another level, it is very difficult to see how the social care sector, which is already really, really struggling, as I harp on about, you know, ad nauseam on this podcast, is going to manage in terms of staffing unless there is a turnaround in supply of British care workers. Now, the government will argue that the changes they've made to the fair pay deal for social care workers, for instance, and their long-term ambitions to reform social care will in time mean that there is a more sustainable sector with a more attractive jobs in it for people. Because one of the issues in social care is also is that people work in social care and then they leave it to go and work for an Amazon depot. That's been a real issue in Swindon, for instance, where care homes were just denuded of staff because even jobs that I'd say popularly are considered to be quite grueling, like working in an Amazon depot, are actually better paid and better conditions than caring for the elderly and long-term disabled. So there is a real problem that goes way beyond immigration. You could say, well, yes, but you know, this is an immigration paper and the Home Office isn't responsible for fixing the problems of the health system. But I think there is also a long-term issue within government where we have departments that often do completely contradictory things or things that really hobble another department's ability to deliver what people want. And naturally, the response of the social care sector to this end of this visa route has been utter horror. And, you know, you can understand why.
Well, just picking up on the care sector, I mean, actually, the numbers now coming in are not a massive issue in a sense. They were a couple of years ago when it just got out of control and had more than 100,000, I think, in 2023 care workers and senior care workers. But because of various changes and tightening of the rules, the numbers have really come down. So in a sense, placing further restrictions on that isn't going to have a huge impact on the net migration figures. But whether or not the impact can be sustained for the care sector is a moot point. And I would say the Fair Work Agreement, which hasn't been put in place yet, must include extra funding for councils to pay providers so they can improve the pay and the terms and conditions of the staff, because that is the key thing, which is the disincentive, I think, for doing that work. Plus, there are some British people that just don't want to do that. It's difficult work at times. It's, you know, it's far from glamorous, personal care, lifting people out of bed, that kind of thing, but hugely important. But without some kind of agreement, even if we don't have a problem for the next couple of years because there's a pool of workers, we'll have a problem in 2 or 3 years and there'll be shortages and then they'll have to recruit from overseas. Just on the other changes, look, whether this succeeds or not depends on whether businesses and other organisations that employ overseas staff really, truly invest in more apprenticeships, in skills and in training for domestic workers. Will they have the incentives to do that? Will they have the support to do that? Or will they just stop recruiting at all? And will some try to use sort of backdoor routes to get people in from overseas? That's the key. You know, there are charges going up. The immigration skills charge is going up by 32%. That will help fund it. But will that cripple some businesses? There's also talk of a levy on foreign students' income of around 6%, which would fund some of the skills training and apprenticeships. This is the right approach, but it's going to be hammering out the detail and ensuring that it's driven through. That's going to be absolutely key. But in terms of the overarching aim and the strategy, I 100% support it. I think it's the right way.
Well, thank you, Isabel. Thank you, Danny. And thank you very much for listening. And if you do enjoy the podcast, please do give us a follow wherever you listen to this podcast to be notified when the next episode is out.